part 3 of my Guyana podcast. It is April 19th, Saturday, and I'm still in the village of Kapui, even though I'll be leaving this morning for Bartica. And I'm blogging at the same time as I'm doing this podcast. Why? Because I'm kind of bored, to be honest. And there's not a whole lot for me to do except enjoy the pastoral brilliance of this brief interlude, but also to indulge in my obsession with social media. So today, it's about 6:30 a.m., and it's a funny thing. I'm always the first person awake in this village, and I got up at 5 a.m. because I can't sleep. The bugs are biting me incessantly, and beautiful light rain happening, so I went for a swim in the lake. It's really bizarre. It's like nobody else lives here but me, but obviously they do. Maybe because it's Easter, nobody's awake yet. Kind of fascinating. One of the things I've been doing is watching the wildlife. I'm a wildlife, of course, I mean bugs. And it's something I haven't done since I was a child. Remember when you were a kid and you'd spend hours watching ants do ant stuff? And then something went missing in our adult lives. We got so busy that we sort of lost the ability to observe those simple things in life. I don't know, it was kind of nice watching. I watched this cricket crawl across a laminated floor on a terrace, and I was trying to figure out, why is he moving so slowly? Is one of his legs broken? I was sure one of his legs was broken, but it wasn't. After watching it for about 10 minutes, that leg was fine. I don't know, I'm rambling here about crickets on linoleum terraces, but the point of this is that how much we have lost in our busy modern lives. You hear that in the background? That's a motorboat. I guess I'm not alone here anymore. We've lost so much in our busy lives, we sort of cease to notice the small things. And it's been pleasurable noticing them again. However, I'm here working, and so it's not possible for me to sort of turn off entirely. Did some more interviews yesterday and learned some more things about the project that I'm here to work on, but also some things about life in general in Guyana. It was nice. I met this 20-year-old girl who clearly very smart, on her way doing big things, got a good job in public health. She was adamant that she refuses to leave this community. She wants to get married to a man here, stay here, raise her kids here. And I'm hearing that a lot. You know, that's something a bit refreshing. Because one of the problems in Guyana, especially when doing development work here, is that there's a net negative population growth. People are actually emigrating more than they are immigrating and being born. So it's one of these few places in the world, especially few in the developing world, where the population's in decline. So it was reassuring hearing someone wanting to stay. This particular community is fairly robust, has population growth, and it is an Amerindian community, so it has certain, I don't want to say advantages, but certain differences from other communities in Guyana in terms of how it's organized, and its rules and its requirements. So apparently people can apply to live here. And the captain was telling me that they have several applications deep, and the council looks over the applications, decide who is warranted to stay here, and they're given a probation period. And that probation period involves not getting into trouble, being a good neighbor. And you're given some land when you arrive. If we accept you to live here, here's some land. And the flip side of that is, if you leave without telling anybody you've left and you're gone for a few months, they'll take away your house and your land and reparcel it to somebody else. On the other hand, if you just tell them, hey, I'm going away for a couple of years, I'm back, that's okay. It's possible to have a real life. It's just fascinating that this ownership angle is a communal ownership, at least technically, and not an individual ownership, even though an individual is free to renovate their home and to work their land and to create what wealth and beauty they can out of it. And I wonder if this is strictly an Amerindian arrangement, or this is something that's common throughout rural Guyana. I should know this, but I don't. Fascinating. Today, I'm off to Bartica, if in fact the rains die down and I can get on a boat. And let me explain how the process works to get to Bartica. From here in Kapui, I must get a boat across the lake to the landing. And then from the landing, I have to get a taxi to drive me to a place called Supanam, which is an hour away. From Supanam, I get another boat to take me to Parika, which is an hour away. Then Parika, I get another boat to take me to Bartica, which is 2 hours away. So it's a lengthy day of traveling, mostly by boats, and I don't like boats. I really don't like boats. So even though it is beautiful, and I am certainly grateful for the opportunities that I've been given, I'm not going to complain about my experiences. I just don't like boats, so I'm not really looking forward to that. Yeah. I should describe the water as well. If you've never been here, and I assume most of you haven't who are listening to this podcast, the waters of Guyana, and Guyana means land of many waters, by the way. I've forgotten which language, which tribal language. And so the way people get around here outside of the sole city of Georgetown is by boat. There are rivers galore, and the Amerindian population are experienced boat makers and boat keepers and boat pilots. The waters, though, are essentially Amazon tributaries. So the water is coming out of the jungle and out into the ocean. But even this lake water is very similar. It's black water. You put your hand a couple inches beneath the surface, you can't see it. Why is it black? Well, there are differing reasons that have been proposed that I've heard. Among them is the leaves that touch the water, the plants that are in the water, exude a certain tannin-like substance, so the water is actually tea-like. I don't know if that's holds up, because the water is actually clear if you take it out. I've heard that there's the fungal growths, the mosses, on the bottom of the water sort of absorb all the sunlight, so it appears black at all times. That sort of makes sense to me. I don't know, and I'm sure someone out there knows, and I'm sure they'll write to me and they'll tell me, but I don't know. Anyway, what this means is that when you go for a swim, it's a bit mysterious, because who knows what's under there. And I gotta say, I'm not an outdoors guy. I don't like swimming in, you know, in natural waters. I really don't, especially when I can't see the bottom. You know, my feet touch things and I go, "Hey, what's that?" You know, something nibbles on me, you go, "Eh, what was that?" And it is the tropics, you know. All kinds of diseases are percolating through the system. But those aren't the worrying things, really. The worrying thing, to bring it back to a development standpoint, is the pollution. There's always crap in the water. I don't mean literal crap, even though there probably is literal crap. There are plastic bottles, bits of plastic wrapping. It is horrible to see. And this is not just a Guyanese problem. This is an endemic problem across all of the developing world that we must struggle with as a race. It's also a problem in the developed world, of course. Waste management continues to be one of the bugaboos of modern human civilization. We need to do something about plastic management. And I wish that people who don't think that this is a problem could come to a place like this and see where their plastic bottles end up. Right? I mean, I'm of the opinion that this country should not allow the existence of any plastic products in absence of a plastic waste management system. They don't have a solid waste management system sufficient to deal with the amount, the tonnage of plastic waste. So how could you ban plastic? It's been done. Rwanda, where I was last year, has a remarkable policy. Some call it tyrannical, but their policy involves at the airport, they check you for plastic bags and things like that. You're not allowed to bring plastic bags into the country. There is no, at least that I could perceive, solid waste issue in Rwanda. there are national cleanup days where people, all the citizens, get outside and they clean stuff off the streets. It's remarkable. So it is possible for a community to organize in such a way to make this problem, if not go away, at least make it more manageable. Because let me tell you, the raw natural beauty that is the heart and blood, that is the true wealth of Guyana, is marred by this moat, this scar, this horrible blemish on this otherwise pastoral perfection that is the natural habitat of Guyana, right? It's heartbreaking walking through these beautiful little forested areas that really haven't been changed much in possibly millions of years, then come across an empty Coke bottle. It's heartbreaking. Part of that is cultural, that people need to understand that they are responsible for the upkeep of their community. I don't know, it sounds paternalistic of me to have that attitude as an outsider coming in saying, you should do this, you should do that. But I'm not entirely an outsider, I am Guyanese. I think I have some right to comment. And I have the same attitude back where I live in Canada, that we have a communal ownership. And it's heartbreaking when people don't perceive that ownership and don't contribute to the upkeep of their common grounds. It's something that scholars called the tragedy of the commons. Common grounds, places where communities come together to share space and experiences that aren't owned by individuals, tend to be poorly kept up because no one person ever feels it's their responsibility to maintain it. It's a failure of the human spirit. And I think these things need to change. All right, I've pontificated enough for this morning. I'm sure I'll return to this topic presently. Bye-bye.